talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Today is March 6th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
And welcome. We've got lots to talk about. Well, not very many movies to review, though. We've only got two movies to review. I think last week we had like eight.
Yeah.
Only two this week.
Kind of light.
But there's plenty of other things to talk about. Lots going on locally. And let's start with the top 12 at the box office. Number 12 was Moonlight. It won Best Picture, so it's going to make more money.
Well, I heard they expanded to more screens, but it came out on home video last week, too, I believe. Today, I'm not sure.
It may have won Best Picture. They're still trying to figure that out. The Oscars was kind of a cluster fark last week. Did you hear that the guy who came in off the tour bus had just gotten out of prison? Did you hear about that?
No, I heard that. The guy
had just gotten out of prison 3 days earlier after serving 22 years for rape.
I heard it was attempted rape.
You don't get 22 years for attempted rape.
Yeah, I don't know. It must have been another. Yeah, this might have been his third strike.
And he was kissing Nicole Kidman's hand and Halle Berry's hand.
Okay,
it's a good thing. It's a good thing he didn't try to kiss Isabelle Huppert's hand, because we know she knows how to handle rapists.
Right. Yeah, she'll sleep with them and then get her son out.
She may have taken him out.
All right. And the wrong picture and the wrong lady dying.
I just think it's unfair as to the lady from Price Waterhouse, because I have a feeling that this was this guy's fault pretty much. He was the one that was tweeting pictures of Emma Stone backstage. Sure, you're not supposed to do.
But the Oscars did have that clip of Charles Bronson from The Mechanic, which just made up for everything.
Well, in a commercial. So.
It wasn't really a commercial. It was a montage sponsored by Rolex. Because it's not a commercial.
It was a commercial.
You'll never see it again.
Sponsored by, that makes it a commercial.
Well, anyways, it doesn't matter because it had a great shot of Bronson. It ended with Bronson, too. After Bronson, you couldn't top that. All right, let's move on. Number 11 was Fist Fight. Jim loved that movie. $2.9 million. La La Land, which won Best Picture for about 2 minutes. Made $3 million. Good for number 10. 50 Shades Darker is barely in the top 10. That made $3.5 million.
It'll be gone this next week. Yeah, that's for sure.
Great Wall hanging in there, number 8. $3.5 million. Hidden Figures, still in the top 10. Number 7 with $3.8 million.
Correction, I did not love Fist Fight. I liked it more than a lot of folks.
I stand corrected. Where was I? Oh, John Wick. Yeah, I still haven't seen John Wick.
You haven't?
No.
Oh, it's Chapter 2.
I just didn't like the first one, and this new one's 2 hours and 10 minutes. I just can't get excited about it. But I'll probably see when it comes out on Blu-ray. That was number 6 with 4.7. Before I Fall, I reviewed Before I Fall for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I gave 3.5 stars. I reviewed it on the podcast last week. It's kind of a young adult movie with the same premise as Groundhog Day. I actually thought it was a pretty good movie. It made 4.9, which is probably a bit of a disappointment. I don't think it cost very much to make, though.
No, it's got, I think, Zoe Deutsch? She's in the process of becoming a big star, but I don't think she can quite carry a picture yet, but she's getting there.
Yeah, I think, I think the word of mouth is going to be pretty decent. I think it'll make some money eventually. Lego Batman movie, still up there. That was at number 4, made $11.7 million. The Shack. Anybody see The Shack?
No, they wouldn't show it to us.
I don't know what The Shack is. Is it a Christian?
It is. Yeah. It is a faith-based film, and I was telling somebody the other day after a screening, if they want to be considered for old films, they should set up press screenings, for goodness sakes. I mean, they showed us Heaven is for Real. Was that the name of it?
And they showed us Risen.
And show us
occasionally they'll show us those things. They showed us the one with Jennifer Garner.
Where
daughter falls in the tree. I can't think of the name of it.
They did. I guess I missed that screening. But because the majority of them,
Don't. Well, they don't have to. But I guess the churches went out in force and saw it because it made $16.1 million. And it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, which is kind of a turnoff for me for that kind of film.
My goodness.
I'll probably never see it.
Can't take those long movies, Aiden.
Last weekend's number one, and that was, of course, the horror film Get Out. Which everybody loves. Is that still at 100%?
I think it's at 99 now. I think I saw it, so it's dropped.
Every party has a pooper.
Yeah, oh. Really.
All right, that was number two.
I'll have to
see
who
pretty that wonderful 26. Stuff.
Though. And number one was Logan. And yes. Logan stars Hugh Jackman, and that made a whopping $85.3 million, which is a lot of money for an R-rated movie. That
oh,
lasts
yeah.
2 hours and 15 minutes.
Following up, I guess it was Deadpool was last year at Valentine's Day, so this is a few weeks after yeah. that, but still, this is, I think, heralding the superhero movies of the summer, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. And proving that they can go R-rated, you know, and be yeah. a hit,
did,
for sure.
Now, when you saw it, did you have that Deadpool trailer at the beginning?
No, we nope. had no trailers before that. I watched that mm. online. Oh. It's very fun.
Well, I thought it was part of the movie, actually. I
really?
Thought, oh, Deadpool has a cameo in this movie. And then I was a little confused because he's standing in front of a theater showing Logan. And then I then I sort of figured it out. It is very funny. Yeah. But when we showed it at the theater, you know, they show the regular trailers, and then it said, you know, now the feature presentation. So it was tacked onto the movie as if it was part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
A little That's bit. And then there was no post credits scene at the end. Last week you said you thought there was one.
There was what I'd heard, and then I heard no, there's not. Yeah. But there's I'm not. Hearing there's one on the one tonight that we're going to see. So
yeah, oh yeah, I know what that one's about.
Okay, I have a feeling. Well, I hope that they'll show it. They'll be part of the press screening. Sometimes those post credit sequences.
Yeah.
Aren't. So you did see Logan over the weekend. Then,
I saw it Friday night. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was. I guess it was a packed house, pretty much.
Pretty much. It was on the IMAX over at the Chesterfield Mall.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
And let's start reviewing some movies, because when I saw Logan at the Chesterfield Mall, I walked out, and in the lobby there was a poster for a movie called Don't Kill It, and it had a big picture of Dolph Lundgren, and I go, what the heck is this? What the heck is Dolph Lundgren headlining a movie, named before the title, on the big screen? Are we back in 1992 or something? But I thought, this looks sort of interesting. So I went home, and I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and with six reviews, it was sitting at 100%.
Wow.
And I thought, well, what is this? They were saying it's this really fun, gory B-movie. So, of course, I had to go see it. And I did, and I'm glad I did. Don't Kill It. It's really a fun movie.
Your town is a real danger. You want these murders to stop, you best listen. I'm a hunter. Demon hunter.
You said this one is unique.
How? So the way transfigured was by being killed. The moment you killed the thing, it became you.
Then what are you going to do when you find him?
Oh, I'll sit him down for a quiet little chat.
It's sort of like The Hidden a little bit, in that there's this demon and he's going from person to person. But once he possesses you, your eyes turn black and you just have to kill everybody in sight. But whoever kills the possessed person, that person becomes possessed. Get it? Hence the title, Don't Kill It.
Kind of like It Follows or something a little bit. Except that was with sex.
Yeah. this is a really weird, gory movie. I had just seen Logan a couple nights earlier, and this makes Logan look like friggin' Disney. Heads being chopped off and split in half and intestines flying across the room. It's pretty good, though, and it's a lot of fun. And the gore effects are really, really well done. It's an R-rated movie, and there's this demon, like I mentioned, and Dolph Lundgren, like I said, stars, and he plays Jebediah Woodley. And Jebediah Woodley is a demon hunter, and he knows exactly who this demon is. And it all takes place in this small town, and there's like four or five sequences where this demon is just going back and forth between people killing each other, and it's pretty crazy. He teams up with a deputy... played by Christina Klebe, who I recognize from Rob Zombie's first Halloween movie.
Oh, so this was made in America. This is an American production. Okay. Yeah, because I looked through it at IMDb, and Dolph was the only name that I recognized.
Oh, no.
So I wasn't sure.
No, there was a few people that I recognized from mostly from really cheesy B movies. And this is a cheesy B movie. It probably cost, I would guess, $5 or $6 million to make. Like I said, the gore effects are amazing. If you like that kind of thing, it's made by a director named Mike Mendez, who a couple years ago made a movie called Bad Ass Spider. No, Big Ass Spider. Which was
that
movie did not play theatrically, though. But I went and bought the Blu-ray because I'd heard good things about it, and that's really fun too. And it sort of has the same sort of, you know. odd tone in that it's, it had all this gore. That one had all these gory scenes of this giant spider eating people. But then they mix it in with this humor. Greg Gunberg, who's a comedian, sort of a comedic actor, you'd probably recognize, he played the lead in that, and he had all this sort of broad comedy. Don't Kill It is similar because Dolph shows up, and he's just, you know, has one line after another. One-liner after another, and there's a lot of humor in it to the point where it doesn't quite, it kind of mixes a little uneasily with all the gore, but I think a lot of young audiences sort of enjoy that. But it's not like Troma. It's not that...
Over the top.
It's not that ridiculous. It's not that silly. It's actually a pretty good fast-paced horror film. I recommend this movie, Don't Kill It. It's only going to be in town for like two more days, and it's only showing at the Chesterfield Mall, and it's only showing at 7:10 p.m.
That's
wacky. So I couldn't go any other nights this week, so I went and saw it last night. Like I said, I'm glad I did. Dolph, you know, Dolph is sort of an interesting actor. I mean, he sort of hit the scene pretty big in 1984's Rocky IV, where he played Drago, the Russian guy. And then he was in He-Man, Masters of the Universe, and then he was in American Soldier with Van Damme. But then he kind of disappeared. You know, he was doing a lot of direct-to-video movies for a couple of decades.
Like the first Punisher movie.
Yeah, exactly, the first Punisher movie.
Which I think made it just a video, right?
Yeah, and I guess I'm not sure if Hollywood knew exactly what to do with him. I mean, he's about 6 foot six. And he just kind of towers over everybody. And he's an actor of limited range. But when the first Expendables movie came out, 6 or 7 years ago, he really stole that movie. And he was the one everybody was talking about when that movie came out, The Expendables. And I'm not surprised he's having a little bit of a comeback here, Dolph. I mean, he produced this movie, Don't Kill, and he has a lot of sort of natural charisma and action star presence. So I hope to see... hope to see Dolph in more movies on the big screen.
Yes.
And I wouldn't be surprised if this movie is enough of a hit, you know, on some ancillary markets to make it a sequel. Maybe he'll be back playing Jebediah Woodley in another film or two. I would see it.
Yeah. Sounds like a more fun version of that. What was that Vin Diesel film came out with, Witch Hunter or something
It's far superior to that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's move on. So catch Don't Kill It if you can. Kate reviewed Table 19 for WeAreMovieGeeks.com and gave it a miserly 1 out of 5 stars. Kate!
I am Renzo. I've achieved puberty and I'm in a rock band.
I'm Walter and I've also reached puberty.
I'm Francie Milner's first nanny.
I can smell the toilets from here. That's how well we know the bride and groom.
I'm Eloise. I got dumped by Francie's brother, the best man back there at Table 1.
No kidding.
This is a great table.
I thought it was 1.5, but that's okay.
Maybe it was.
Yeah, I would say 1.5, maybe 2.
I would have given it 1.5 or maybe 2. It doesn't work. It's not a very good movie, but it wasn't offensively bad. And I don't think I was ever really bored with it. It was only 85 minutes long. What were your problems with it?
Talking about offensively bad. One of our fellow reviewers compared it after the screening to Love the Coopers. Offensively bad. Yeah.
Well, that also has June Squibb.
Yeah,
it's true. The
June Squibb shows Table 19.
Yeah.
But she's smoking pot in this movie. Oh, the old lady's smoking pot, and she smoked pot in another movie.
Was that was somewhere in my dreams. See When My Dreams with a Blythe Danner.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I kept waiting for her to fart in this movie like she did in Love the Coopers, you know, because that's when you got an 86-year-old woman, you just got to make her fart and smoke pot.
She got magenta hair in this, too.
Kate. I'm sorry.
Okay. So maybe I should have given it 2 instead of 1.5, which is what I intended to give it. Because I think the script did have a little bit of potential. It's just that you don't really see it on screen. So at the beginning of Table 19, you see Anna Kendrick, who's the star of this, struggling whether to RSVP yes or no to a wedding invitation. And she should say no. She should have said no. And that would be the best advice for audiences. Yet, she says yes. And the reason why is her character, Eloise, is the ex-maid of honor at this wedding. It's her best friend's wedding, and she was dropped from that position when she was dropped by her boyfriend, who is the best man. He's also the bride's brother. And that role is played by Wyatt Russell, who's the son of Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
That's right.
Okay, so she's
we last saw him in Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah. Right. And he was better in Everybody Wants Some.
She's struggling whether, you know, she can deal with the heartbreak of seeing her ex or, you know, not go to her best friend's wedding, and she decides to go.
Yeah, she burns the invitation in the first scene.
Well, she marks no, and then she marks yes, then she burns it, then she blows out the ashes. So
and she sends it in with half burnt.
She sends it in with this burnt quarter.
Yeah, the message you're sending with.
But anyway.
That was sort of funny, but that was the first 2 minutes. You know, it just went downhill from there.
Actually, I thought that was like the funniest scene in the movie.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. I thought it had potential. Like, right. This movie's going to be.
And you know, the thing is, the script is written by the Duplass brothers, Jay and Mark Duplass, who did indie fam favorites like Puffy Chair and Jeff Who Lives at Home. Yeah. But they don't direct this. They don't Baghead. They don't direct this.
And
instead,
they're not the only screenwriters.
Well,
I'm wondering if they were brought in as sort of script doctors.
Maybe, or maybe that just wasn't working out and they decided to hand it off. At any rate, the actual director is Jeffrey Blitz, who directed the documentary Spellbound and a bunch of TV shows, including Rocket Science and The Office.
Oh, yeah, Rocket Science was a feature, though, right?
Was it a feature? Yeah, I thought it was a TV
Anna
show.
Is in
well,
too,
anyway,
yeah.
She is in that. But his directing is kind of the downfall of this film. I thought the cast is not really bad. Anna Kendrick's the best.
Yeah, cast is strong, I think.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think the cast is the worst part of this.
You and I disagree on that. Because June Squibb, who was in Nebraska, plays this awful character. Yeah. She's the ex-nanny, and she's overly sweet and just really a terrible part.
I like June Squibb, but a little June Squibb goes a long way.
Well, yeah. I like her maybe better than you, but not in this role. Lisa Kudrow is in here. She's pretty much miscast as one of a pair of bickering
I think
along with Craig Robinson.
They're like the old married couple, but they know how to push each other's buttons, and they're always kind of teasing each other the whole time.
Teasing might be the gentle way of putting it. It's kind of more like needling each other.
Oh, yeah, but I did not buy those two as a married couple.
I did not either.
There was no chemistry. They were supposed to be going through a rough patch in their marriage, but you still have to have chemistry. All I saw was hostility. And then there was this whole subplot
planning
on cheating on her husband that had no payoff.
Right. They looked like a couple on the verge of divorce, and there's not much comedy in that.
But she is part of my favorite gag from the movie about her wardrobe. That I got tickled.
Well,
by.
Yeah, that was one of the better jokes, is that, you know, she happens to wear a jacket that resembles the jackets that the waiters are wearing at this wedding.
And
every time she stands up, they try to give her a tray of hors d'oeuvres. Or something.
Yeah, well, they milk that joke about 40 times.
And the cast is rounded out by Steve Merchant, who's also from The Office, who plays a squirrely nephew.
He's funny in it.
He
might be the only cast member that works.
Well, I don't agree, because I did think Anna Kendrick tried hard. But Steve Merchant and Tony Revolori, who is from Grand Budapest Hotel, they make a lot of what they have to work with. They don't have a lot to work with as far as their characters, but they do some good physical comedy, and they get a little comedy in there. But mostly this film is a long, slow slog that starts out with a kind of bridesmaids possibility and some slapstick comedy, and then it makes a turn where it's going to go for the bittersweet and the touching and the dramedy aspect, and it completely, you know, falls there. This director does not get any of that out of these characters.
Yeah, I was reminded of a couple other movies about wedding receptions that seem to last forever, like Melancholia, and what was that, An Exorcism, was that what it was called?
Was pretty good. I kind of like that
one. It was a wedding reception that lasted forever.
Well, there's Robert Altman's A Wedding, which I just watched recently, which really holds up well. I didn't like any of the cast, except Merchant was okay. Anna Kendrick, in my opinion, I'm not sold on her as a movie star. Maybe in something like Pitch Perfect, which is aimed at teens, but is an adult movie star. She's just sort of small and sort of mousy. I think she's more of a TV. Right. She should switch to TV. That's my advice for Anna Kendrick. I think she would.
I have to say that, you know, watching this film was kind of like going to this wedding, which was an awful slow experience. There was one cast member who I thought was awful, and I hope I never see him in a film again. And that's Wyatt Russell, who is like a complete flat cipher. I don't know why he was there. Idiot. He comes off like an idiot.
He comes off like he's mentally challenged.
He comes off like he's barely there. Yeah. He's not, you know, handsome enough to just stand there and look good looking.
He's supposed to be doing this charming stoner thing, I guess, but it doesn't work.
There's supposed to be chemistry between him and Anna Kendrick, and there's none. None at all. Well, there's more chemistry between her and a character she meets early on in the film.
Huck.
Yeah, Huck.
But I'm not going to put on the play
by Thomas Cockerell.
But I'm going to blame the director and the writers for that character. We can't fully blame Wyatt Russell because he was very charming and everybody wants some.
I really blame the director.
Oh, yeah. That was a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, I really think it's the director that's at fault with this because the director, it's very perfunctory.
And the writers and the cast and the editors and the cinematographers. Oh, and then the comedy. Let's talk a little bit about the comedy. Oh, I didn't see that whole thing knocking over the cake coming.
They almost knock over the cake
like six times. Yep. And then, of course, the cake falls over. And then they go to this wedding that's in the same building, and they just happen to have the identical cake that they steal. I guess they had the same baker.
Well, I guess by that time, everyone's so boozed up at the reception, they're not going to notice the cake is different, you know? But it did try to use its indie credit. It takes some turns that you aren't expecting, especially with the Tony Revoli character. It's odd that he's got a mother that you just hear on the phone who's really into whether or not he's going to score at this wedding. It's very, very odd.
Which is why she sends him, this teenage boy, to the wedding by himself.
Yeah.
So he can pick up girls. Yeah.
It's very, very strange. Yeah. It doesn't quite pay off, really. No. But it doesn't go in a direction you're thinking because he sees a girl his age and he's like, oh, they're going to have a nice...
But then he just creeps her out the moment he meets her.
That's what I mean, yeah. It doesn't go how you think it's going to go.
No, at any rate. So I recommend the audiences just pass on this. RSVP no and don't go.
We recommend they see something else.
So
Jim and Kate and I all think Table 19 is a lousy movie. That's it as far as reviewing new movies go. Only two movies to review. Well, that's more movies to review next week, though. And you want to talk about Kitty? What's it called?
Keddie.
Keddie, oh, sorry.
Okay. However, it is Turkish for kitty or for cat, and it's a documentary about street cats in Istanbul. Apparently, there's a hundreds of years tradition of cats roaming the streets in Istanbul where they control the rodents, and everybody loves them for that. And people, take care of the cats, and they feed them, and they're kind of semi-tame, and the documentary focuses on several of those cats.
But we haven't
cats.
Seen it.
So, no, but
it's over at the front.
It's a documentary, doesn't really have a plot, but if you like cats, that might be for you.
I don't like cats, and cats don't like me.
Well, don't go see that movie.
They wouldn't show it to us.
What else is coming up we can review? We saw Beauty and the Beast, but we can't talk about it. They've threatened to... Can we talk a little
about the controversy about that that's brewing right now? It's interesting. Well, maybe. I was going to say there's a controversy about one of the characters being gay. But what's interesting to me is I just found out. Of course, I knew the religious right would be just up in arms about this. We're going to boycott this movie, but. It turns out the LGBT community aren't that thrilled about it either, because I guess in the character's name is LeFou, and I guess that's translated from French
means fool.
And I was like, well, you know what? But there's more to that. We don't want to give away too much, but there's more to this character than what you saw in the animated film. He has a sort of arc, and it's much more complex. So it'll be interesting when we can't reveal everything about it. Well, we can talk more about it, like you say, next week. But don't be put off by all the controversy of people
it's handled pretty well.
It's much more subtle than people make you think.
I don't know if it was subtle at all.
No.
It was pretty much every scene.
Let me say.
It was funny. It was well done.
Subtle as far as what kids are going to see. Adults will get it, but kids,
a lot of them reminded me of Smithers and his crush on Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely.
But we can review that. I guess we can review that next Monday. Are we still under...
I think it's okay next month. There's some stuff on Rotten Tomatoes already about it, so I would think so.
Not the first gay character in a Disney movie, though.
Not really.
Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins.
No.
That guy was queer as a $3 bill.
Just got a bad accent.
So can we talk about some other things there?
Wait a minute. What else are we seeing this week? What are we seeing this week besides tonight?
I think that's it. Just tonight, I believe.
Well, there are two more that are opening, but they're not screening them for us.
That's true.
They don't like us.
I'm still hoping I'm going to have waiting for me in my mailbox when I get home a screener of The Ottoman Lieutenant, which looks like an interesting sort of historical romance drama. I know that Josh Hartnett is in it and a couple of other English actors, but I think it's or American and English actors, but I think it's mostly a foreign film. But hoping I either get a screening link or the DVD waiting for me.
I think it's mostly a Turkish-made film and set in World War One, and they kind of deal with religious intolerance. There's Armenian Christian and Turkish Muslims, but it does not mention the Armenian genocide is what I hear about that.
Hopefully I'll get to see it. We'll see.
But there's another one opening, which is called The Last Word, and it's a dramedy that stars Shirley MacLaine. As a prickly woman who hires someone to write her own obituary so she can have the last word on her own life, apparently.
She's usually prickly in films these days, it seems like.
So we haven't seen that one yet. They're not going to screen it for us.
Maybe we're going to review those next Monday.
But we'll see.
But they open Friday.
They open Friday,
And also opening Friday is Kong Skull Island.
Kong's God on the island, but the devils live below us.
And what are they called?
I call them skull crawlers.
Why?
Never said that name out loud before. It sounds stupid now that I say it. Just, you call them whatever you want.
Originally just called Skull Island, and now they call it Kong Skull Island. I guess they
want to hammer that home, just in case.
You don't know about the giant ape. I think this movie's going to be a big hit. I think it's obviously going to be number one. This weekend. We're seeing it tonight. I'm super excited. And I'll be reviewing it for Weird Movie Geeks.
I looked over. The director is the same fellow that did Kings of Summer.
Yeah, which I didn't care for.
An odd choice to go from that to this sort of big blockbuster action film, which is hopefully going to be restarting a new franchise, we're going to see.
Yeah. At first, you know, when I first saw the trailer, this character played by John C. Reilly sort of bugged me a little bit. It seemed like it was a sort of serious action film. And then they brought in John C. Reilly, and he's kind of playing this wacky comedic character. And that character was originally supposed to be played by Michael Keaton, who had to drop out at the last minute and was replaced by John C. Reilly. But I've seen the trailer several times since, and that character's sort of grown on me. I hope he doesn't act too goofy.
It's like he's like a take on Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. That's what what I get from the trailer.
Well, apparently the movie opens with him in World War II crashing onto the island, then jumps ahead 30 years. The movie takes place in 73.
That's true. It's right. It is interesting. It's set during the 70s there. You think it would be like a more modern-day thing, but I'm hoping for it today. I'm rooting for it.
I'm super excited. We'll be back next Monday to review Kong Skull Island and look for my review of Kong Skull Island this Thursday evening over at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. If you're a movie buff and you'd like to see old movies on the big screen, this is a great week to be a St. Louisan because there's so much cool stuff showing on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing, but tomorrow night, of course, you can go over to the Way Out Club, where I do my 16mm double feature night. I will be showing Arthur with Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli and John Gielgud in his Oscar-winning role.
It's not the Russell Brand version? Man.
Who was John Gielgud?
Wasn't Helen Mirren the John Gielgud?
Helen Mirren was in it. Greta Gerwig was in the Liza Minnelli role.
I never saw the remake.
And, we were talking about her. Jennifer Garner is just completely evil in that film. It's really strange.
See the original.
Okay.
There was a sequel to the original, which I don't think I ever saw.
Arthur II on the Rocks.
That was not so good.
I don't think that was considered to be very good, but I don't think I ever saw it. So that's at 8 o'clock, followed by Chateau's Land, with Charles Bronson at 10 o'clock. And now I can announce what's going to be showing at next month's 16mm double feature night. This is always super exciting when I do this. It's like there's just electricity in the air. Because listeners of the We Are Movie Geeks podcast are the first to hear this big, major important announcement. April 4th, 16mm double feature night, starting at 8 o'clock, Sylvester Stallone, 1983's First Blood.
Oh, yeah.
First Blood was the first time that Sylvester Stallone played his John Rambo character, which he went on to play in three or four subsequent movies.
Along with Richard Crenna.
Richard Crenna's in it, Brian Dennehy. It's got an all-male cast.
Yeah, so. David Caruso, I think, is in it, isn't he? Or is I think so. I'll have to look that up. Yeah.
It's a pretty good movie. I haven't seen it in a long time, and this is from Roger Burke's collection, and he says the color is superb.
Oh, nice. Low fade all those
color.
Greens in the forest. Yeah,
so that'll be good. That's First Blood. That'll start at 8 o'clock, and then let's see. After that, at 10 o'clock, Burt Reynolds is back. This will be the second Burt Reynolds movie we've shown at 16mm double feature night, and it's Burt Reynolds' 1977 masterpiece, Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, my.
So that's going to be First Blood and Smokey and the Bandit. We all love Smokey and the Bandit. And this is that's also from Roger's collection. I've actually seen Roger's print of Smokey and the Bandit. I did a Super 8 right. Burt Reynolds theme show about 4 or 5 years ago, and we showed it then. So, and I know that's in real good shape as well. Jerry Reed, Jackie Gleason is Buford Justice. Yes. Here's a piece of trivia. Did you know that Burt Reynolds' father was the chief of police in Jupiter, Florida? And one of his deputies was named Buford Justice.
Oh, no. Yeah, really?
So they didn't make up that name. Burt Reynolds actually knew somebody named Buford Justice.
Oh, that's a great name.
It is. Well, it seems like a movie name that they made up for this film.
Yeah.
So that's April 1st starting at 8 o'clock, and it's free, though we do set out a jar to take donations for the National Children's Cancer Society. There is something going on at the Tivoli this week, which is crazy. They're showing 3 classics on the big screen.
Oh.
It's Tuesday night, which nobody's going to go because everybody will be at my 16mm show. But they're showing My Little Chickadee.
Oh, a favorite.
Yeah.
I've never seen My Little Chickadee. I know W.C. Fields and Mae West.
Yeah, oh, you need to see that.
Yeah.
No, you need to go to 16mm.
Well, another time you need to see it.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting that they were kind of battling, I heard, on the set, trying to, jockeying to get the best lines and the best scenes.
Trying
and
to
all
top
that.
Each other.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been interesting.
Much to our delight.
Yeah, yeah. Because there are a few scenes together are just great. I think there's they meet on a train, I think, at the start of it. So funny. Margaret Hamilton is in it also,
yes.
I believe, as sort of the spinster that I don't know, she's tangling with Fields quite a bit in it. And there's a whole thing about a masked bandit that's kind of interesting. And there's two or three different guys that it could be that is sort of romancing with Mae West's character. And this is, I guess, a lot of people think this is her last really great movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So
and the two of them together, are just that makes it worth seeing anyway.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Well, that's part of a film series that's being sponsored by the Kemper Art Museum over at Washington University, and it's tied into an exhibit. And the exhibit is by an artist whose name I have here. Rosalind Drexler. Have you ever heard of Rosalind Drexler?
Drexler.
Well, she was born in 1926, and she's still living, so that makes her about 91. And there's an exhibit called Rosalind Drexler, Who Does She Think She Is? And apparently the art in this exhibit is sponsored or influenced this Miss Drexler's paintings. So that's why they picked these three films, because I guess somehow they tie into this woman's paintings. The other two films, like I say, My Little Chickadee is Tuesday, White Heat with Jimmy Cagney.
And St. Louis's own Virginia Mayo.
That's right. Yeah. What's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock,
that's
relatively.
A great. Cody Jarrett.
That's right.
Top of the
Raoul
world.
Raoul Walsh directed that.
Oh, it's a great film.
And then Thursday night is Raging Bull. So these are all free. They're all on the big screen. I mean, when was the last time you had a chance to see Raging Bull on the big screen?
Oh, glorious black and white. It's a beautiful film.
I don't really quite get the connection with this artist on these films. Maybe if you go and see the exhibit over at Kemper Art Museum, you'll get it. So that's pretty neat. And those are all free. Did I say they were free?
No,
they're free.
That's
that makes
better.
It even better.
Oh my gosh! I wonder I hope they'll be on the big screen there. But
yeah, they will be.
Whenever they do
these Kemper Art Museum things, they always get the big screen.
Oh, well, nice.
Let me say a little about Rosalind Drexler. Pop art is her art form. Her most notable work is called Marilyn Pursued by Death. That sounds interesting. Yeah. She was also a novelist and a playwright, Obie winner, an Emmy winner. So an interesting
and a wrestler. She was a lady wrestler.
Oh, my.
She was.
Yes, she was. Wow. A former professional
wrestler.
She looks
like a lady wrestler. Or at least
in her if you like Warhol, you might like her work. Pop art sort of stuff. So there you go.
All right, so go see those free movies except Tuesday night. Just go rent My Little Chickadee and go see a 16mm double feature night. But like I said, there's all kinds of old movies playing. All About Eve played last night. I was going to go. I actually had free tickets, but I knew I wouldn't have another chance to see Don't Kill It. All About Eve won 10 Oscars, I think. Don't Kill It probably is not going to win any, but, you know, you gotta set your priorities. All About Eve is playing again, though, Wednesday night. This is part of the Fathom events at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock at a bunch of theaters. So go to fathomevents.com and... classic.
Yeah, wonderful film because, you know, Betty's kind of in the news again because of that TV show Feud, which is all about the making of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. So I think there's going to be Betty Davis, like, renaissance or reinterest. So that's a great way to jump right in because that's one of her very best movies.
Absolutely.
And then it'll be introduced by Ben Mankiewicz, whose grandfather directed All About Eve.
Directed, wrote it. It's a heck of a script.
It sure is.
Goodness. All right. So that's All About Eve. That's, like I said, that's this Wednesday. And there's more. Oh, this Saturday morning over at the High Point is the classic, monthly classic film. And it is Vertigo. That's going to be a big
wonderful
ride at the High Point for Vertigo, I predict.
Oh, yes.
And Jim and Dana Young and I wrote an article about 6 years ago called The Top 10 Alfred Hitchcock Movies of All Time. And I'm going to repost that article tomorrow night to tie in with the screening of Vertigo with the High Point. Vertigo did not make the top five. It did make our top 10. It was like number 6 or 7. But some people consider it Hitchcock's best.
Well, I think it's essential Hitchcock.
Yeah. Is it Sight and Sound that said that was the greatest movie of all time?
Yeah, but I saw it for the first time at the High Point. Remember back in the early 80s when they ran 6 or 8 Hitchcock movies?
Yeah, that had been tied up in legal matters.
And it was really the first time a lot of people had seen these Hitchcock movies. I know they did Rear Window and Rope and The Trouble with Harry.
And was it the Man Who Knew Too
Much?
Yeah,
The Man Who Knew Too
Much. The version
with
Stewart and Doris Day.
The second one.
And they ran all those at the High Point. I think that was a lot of people were first exposed to these Hitchcock. When I was a kid, it was always North by Northwest, The Birds, and Psycho. Those were the three that played on TV all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the ones I grew up on. And really, in the mid-80s, I sort of discovered these other Hitchcock movies for the first time. When they played them at this you know, it was before cable and VHS and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I remember they came out in Chicago, and I recall seeing Rear Window in the theater there in Chicago, and the first appearance of Grace Kelly, people actually gasped in the theater. She just so gorgeous in it.
Yeah, it's a terrific
first
shot. Yeah.
With Kim Novak and Jimmy Stewart. Kim Novak's still around.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very, very creepy Hitchcock film, but really essential viewing.
Oh, yeah, so very complex, influential. Yeah.
Okay, so that's 10:30 a.m. this Saturday morning at the High Point. Harry Hamm is our buddy from KMOX. He reviews movies. He always introduces the classic film series at the High Point, although sometimes he doesn't show up and they ask me to do it. That happened a couple of months ago. But hopefully Harry will do it because he always has interesting things to say and interesting insight. And then, of course, the classic French Film Festival opens this Friday also. And Au Revoir Les Enfants, which I also saw at the High Point when it was new.
Another classic, wonderful.
Films. Everybody loves that movie. That's a Holocaust drama. We saw a Holocaust drama last week. It was called Zookeeper's Wife.
Mm-hmm. That's coming up.
I guess we can review that later on in the month. Lots of Holocaust movies out there. And that's Friday night. They usually get the local critics and French professors and things like that. I can't remember who's introducing Au Revoir Les Enfants. Probably some guy who likes French movies. And then Saturday night is Colors Blue, which was made by a Polish director.
Well, he's done a lot of films in French, but yes, he was Polish born.
I think he passed away. I saw all those blue,
recently,
white, and red films, and it stars
Juliette Binoche.
So that's Saturday night, and that will be introduced by our friend Kelvin Wilson from the Post-Dispatch. And then Sunday night is Nana. Nana is a 1926 silent film by Jean Renoir, best known for Grand Illusion and Rules of the Game, which have both played at the Classic French Film Festival.
And son of the famous painter.
That's right. And Nana lasts 2.5 hours, which is kind of long for a silent film. But it will be accompanied by live music by the Poor People of Paris. So it's always good to see silent films.
With live music.
On the big screen with live music. There's nothing better.
The best.
So don't be put off by the long running time. It will be a heck of an entertainment evening over there. That's at Webster University's Moore Auditorium. And you can also go to cinemastlouis.org and see what else is coming up for the Classic French Film Festival. And finally, locally, we've got Edgar Allan Poe Buried Alive over at Webster University. That's this Thursday night. I don't know a whole lot about it. I did a little research, and apparently it's a narrative about the life of Edgar Allan Poe. And it has an actor playing Poe. I didn't write his name down. But it looks sort of interesting. I'm not sure if it's a one-man show or not. I found some photos from it, and I'll just show Poe standing there. Probably not a one-man show. I don't know. Edgar Allan Poe Buried Alive. 7:30 Thursday night at Webster University's Moore Auditorium. Same place the French Film Festival is showing. And then you wanted to talk about the True or False Film Festival was over the weekend. Last year we had Anina from On STL. She had gone and she actually joined us here in the studio and talked about, that's where we first heard about that Tickled movie. But nobody from, Michael from Weird Movie Geeks was there.
Yeah.
We should have had.
I often go, but I didn't go this year. Yeah. But it's a great place to see a lot of really interesting documentaries and things that are often going to be Oscar contenders later on and things you won't necessarily ever see
here. It's gotten to be a huge and prestigious documentary film.
And it's great fun. If you've ever been, it's a real party.
Starts off with a parade
and,
a documentary film parade?
Yes, that's right. It's very fun. They're very fun-loving.
It takes the stodginess out of it.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's all about fun.
Yeah, I know a lot of the subjects of the films show up for that, too. I think they were saying last year.
The subjects, the directors, the discussions are terrific.
Yeah. It's
a very fun event.
Well, we missed it. Maybe we can get Michael to write a report about what he saw.
I hope so.
Over the weekend. And I guess that's it locally. But that's a good week. Good grief. All these old movies showing on the big screen. Movie buffs are in heaven this
week.
Especially and free ones.
And the Classic French Film Festival this weekend. Lots of good stuff.
We've almost run out of things to talk about, but not quite, because we're going to go see King Kong Skull Island tonight. Where will that fall on the list of the best giant ape movies? I guess we'll find out. Maybe we'll put it in order next week. About 4 years ago, I wrote an article for Horror Hound magazine called The Best Giant Ape Movies of All Time. And King Kong from 1933 was, of course, number one. And King Kong Lives was number two. King Kong Lives was the sequel to the 1976 remake of King Kong. And it opens with them putting a artificial heart in King Kong after he has fallen off the World Trade Center.
It sounds so ridiculous. Was it all set in Louisiana or something like that? Yeah.
It was pretty awful.
I
shouldn't say that. It was kind of fun.
He has him chomping on little rubber alligators or anything.
But he's not just chomping on them, he's like biting their heads off. It's real gruesome.
Well, you have a list of great giant ape movies wearemoviegeeks.com.
Well, that's the same article. Right. That's the same article.
You mentioned Mighty Joe Young, which is one of my favorite giant ape movies.
Brian Kerwin. You were right, Jen. That was Brian Kerwin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it's interesting, what was your runner-up, your honorable mention, Ape, is just now coming out on a restored Blu-ray that restores all its 3D. I would imagine
3D.
It probably looks better on Blu-ray 3D than it did in the theaters when it came out in 76.
Yeah. Although I doubt his ratty ape costume looks much better. Probably looks worse because you see all the zippers on it. That's the one where the ape gives the finger to the camera at one point. Joanna Kearns, who wasn't she in Growing Pains?
She's going by the name Donna DeVerona, I think, in that film. But wisely changed her name after that film. It's a terrible. The poster's advertising. You see him fighting a great white shark. And it's like he's wrestling with a big rubber. It might be just a dead shark or something. But it kind of reminds me of Bela Lugosi having to fight the rubber octopus in Bride of the Monster.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But you know what? I bet you anything I end up buying that Blu-ray. as bad as it was. Let's see. Also in the top 10 list was Queen Kong. Ever seen that one? It's
seen clips of it.
It's British, and it's got some Hammer gals in it. It's got Valerie Leon from Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, and it's got Linda Hayden, who's my favorite Hammer blonde. She shows up in it, and Ruta Lenska, who was used to do commercials for something.
What Hammer film was Hayden in again?
She was in Taste the Blood of Dracula.
Oh,
she
was the blonde. One,
she was the blonde that gets possessed by and kills her father.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, but she was in all kinds of great horror films in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
Madhouse and all kinds of good
so
stuff.
So they kept that unreleased until 82 in this country or
Is that what it was? It was made in 76, I believe. And it also stars that Robin Asquith guy who was this mop-top blonde who was in, like, Confessions of a Window Cleaner and all these weird British sex movies in the 70s. It's pretty fun. I've actually got the DVD on that one. That was number 7. Number 8 was... Well, that was number 8. Number 7 was Konga with Michael Goh.
Which is kind of, well, he does, you know, don't get the giant ape stuff until, what, the last five minutes or so. And he just kind of stands around. I guess he's supposed to be in, you know, in Piccadilly or something. Yeah. And I guess you see the big band, the clock in the background. And, you know, they've got Michael Goh in a giant ham kind of, you know, superimposed. And he says, put me down.
I've got that on Super 8. I've shown it at my Way Out Club show. And then King Kong Escapes is actually quite a fun film. That was co-produced by Rankin Bass.
Yeah. I recall seeing it at the drive-in when I was a kid.
And it was actually derived from the King Kong animated series that Rankin Bass had produced.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that when that came out. I might have had that little toy with the chatty ring, that little puppet of King Kong. But it had a great theme song, that old, you know, King Kong show, and I think that introduced Kong to a whole new generation that animated show did.
Yeah.
Definitely. But yeah, so this was Rankin Bass did have a hand in that. Mm-hmm. Right?
I guess they teamed up with Toho. It's actually the same costume from King Kong versus Godzilla, which was made a few years earlier. Mm-hmm. But then they bring in Mecha Kong, you know, because a giant robot gorilla is so practical.
Yes.
But it's a really fun movie. It's a great movie. Number 6 on my list was Mighty Peking Man, which I showed at 16mm Double Feature Night about 5 or 6 months ago. Well, did you see that?
I think I saw the last part of it, yeah.
Evelyn Kraft was a really sexy German actress who shows up in that movie.
She's kind of like playing a Sheena, Queen of the Jungle
She's having trouble keeping her nipple in her fur bikini from popping out, which it does several times. Son of Kong, I've never been a huge fan of Son of Kong. It was kind of a rushed sequel. It actually came out the same year as King Kong. It only lasts about an hour.
Well, I think in that documentary you had about Kong, they talk about how funny it is. It starts out with, you know, Carl Denham trying to hide from all the lawsuits. You know, so it is like it picks up just hours after the events of Kong. Yeah. And it must have been interesting for audiences back then to be so floored by King Kong. And then, my gosh, just months later, there's another one.
But you kind of wish they would take in their time and produce a better quality sequel.
Yeah.
And then King Kong versus Godzilla, which I mentioned, was number 4 on the list. I've also shown that at 16mm Double Feature Night.
Yeah, that was first time a guy in a suit played Kong, I guess. Although there's a brief few seconds of their attempt at stop motion, but it's Kong's. Does he fight an octopus in that or something like that?
An octopus, exactly. And there's some stop motion in that. And actually, in the original King Kong, there was a guy in a suit when he's climbing the long shots of him climbing the Empire State Building. Mm-hmm. And then I don't have the 76 King Kong version on this list because I really is sort of anti that film, but some people like that movie.
Well, they like the ape suit that Rick Baker made for it, but I think everyone going in was expecting to see this big mechanical ape that Dino De Laurentiis was touting. Oh, we created this thing, and you're going to be, and it just kind of stands there and holds up a couple of girders or something, and that's it.
Yeah. You know, I've got some hair from that giant robot. I do. I brought it. I actually hosted a tribute to King Kong at St. Louis International Film Festival, and I brought it and showed it off. Everybody was so jealous. But I don't like that version. But I do like the Peter Jackson version from 05 that made number 3 on the best giant apes list.
They could just take out that scene of them ice skating. That would be so much better. That's so silly.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, it's really nice. It's the nice 30s tribute, stuff works. I don't know if Jack Black works as the Carl Denham character.
Yeah, when he says the line, you know, was beauty killed the beast, I always sort of cringe. But it's still, it's really good. And
Naomi Watts is really great at it.
Yeah, and Peter Jackson clearly has a love for the original. It's a good tribute. So there's really nothing terribly wrong with it. Mighty Joe Young, I have number 2. This is a the special effects are so sophisticated, Mighty Joe Young, the animation. And that's the one that Willis O'Brien won his Oscar for, because they didn't have best special effects in 1933 when they made King Kong. So he finally got his Oscar 10 years later when he did Mighty Joe Young, although Ray Harryhausen, who was his apprentice at the time, did about 80% of the animation. Mm-hmm. But I know Harryhausen was never remotely bitter about that. He loved Willis O'Brien.
That's just like a perfect kid's matinee movie.
Absolutely, it's
and it ends with him rescuing a bunch of kids at the end of it. So the kids all knew that Mighty Joe was a good guy during even though the people are wanting to to take him out and the police are going to after him and all that, but we know that King
and Harry hasn't had Joe a cameo in the remake of Mighty Joe Young. He's standing there with Terry Moore in one shot.
That was a nice touch.
The Mighty Joe Young remake didn't make my list either, although I think it's better than the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong. But that's
certainly not saying much.
I don't know why I didn't make my top 10 list. And of course, number one was King Kong from 1933. So where will Kong Skull Island fall?
I don't know.
We'll address that next Monday when we do the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. But this week, we have to wrap it up because we are out of time. But this was fun, guys. We only reviewed two movies, but we still had plenty to talk about because we always do over here at the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Be sure to listen to us again next week.
Black leather, crash, 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 black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle there, chaps.
You happy in your work, Johnny?
By the lift!